I'm Duncan MacLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show, which is brought to you today by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more about their products and solutions, and we thank them for partnering with the show. Now, Werner Lindemann is Group CEO at Data Group IT. That's a value-added technology distributor operating across 16 markets in Africa. Before that, he held senior leadership roles at BCX and Clickatel, giving him more than 30 years of experience in total at the intersection of tech, sales strategy, and digital transformation. Today, though, we're talking about a topic that should be front of mind for every business leader, and that's AI and cybersecurity. And there's a ton to unpack in the discussion today. Werner, welcome to the show. Tell me a bit about Data IT Group and why you joined the business.
Thank you, Duncan. I joined exactly 1 year, so it's my anniversary now. And it was an interesting shift, both from an opportunity and a career perspective. That, as you say, Data Group IT sits at the intersection of what's happening in Africa with cloud, AI, cybersecurity. And we are fanatical about how we help the African continent gear up for the changes around cybersecurity, AI, as well as quantum computing that's at the forefront of everything we do. So exciting times in the industry, but also excited in joining this intersection in the market. And that was a key reason why I joined Data Group IT. Cybersecurity is outgrowing anything that you see from a tech perspective today. So it's the forefront and the bleeding edge of what's happening in tech in Africa.
Okay. So you describe yourself as a value-added distributor, which presumably means you represent a lot of international brands in the cybersecurity space. What are some of the big ones that are on your books?
Yeah, the biggest ones are Checkpoint, Thales, which has also bought companies like Imperva and Gemalto, Darktrace, and then some of the other players like Elastic and Exabeam, etc. We represent about 20 of these vendors across the African continent. And we've made sure that we've got a good spread that can address the cybersecurity posture of all the major customers in Africa.
Okay. As you mentioned, 16 markets. I presume South Africa is one of those. What are some of the other big ones you're in?
Yeah, our business actually started in West Africa and Nigeria. Five countries in West Africa. The normal ones, Nigeria, Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire, Cameroon, Morocco, East Africa, 5 countries, and then SADC, we're in 7 countries, including South Africa. But we've only been really active in South Africa as such in the last 3 to 4 years.
Interesting. Okay. I'm seeing more and more tech companies coming out of West Africa, particularly the Nigerian market, which is interesting. Is the business still headquartered there, or is it based here in South Africa now?
No, we've got 3 regional headquarters, one in Lagos, one in Nairobi, one in Johannesburg, and we operate across the region from there. So my team is also spread. I've got finance and operations and people across the region. We are not South Africa-centric.
I see. Okay, and how long has the business been around?
It's actually, we're going into our 20th year now. It was originally a distributor focusing on NetApp. And in 2013, we pivoted to cybersecurity. So we only do cybersecurity when we wake up in the morning till when we go to bed. We speak cybersecurity and the trials and tribulations around that.
Okay. Well, let's dive into the topic then. You've obviously got a very good perspective on what's going on in the African context. I think we often, when we speak to cybersecurity vendors, we're getting the European or the US context or what's going on in the world. So from a threat perspective, what are you seeing out there in African markets in which you operate? And is it different to what's happening in the rest of the world?
I think the theme is very similar. And because of this transformation of AI and technology, and what I mean by that is when you talk about AI influencing technology, it dramatically transformed the scale, the personalization, and the speed of it. Okay, plus the people will talk about the cost of the attack that's dropped. So so in that context, it's not different in Africa than in any other markets. However, in Africa, it's about how do we help organizations gear up to address some of the challenges. Some of the challenges are around availability of skilled workers. So Africa is a bigger problem than the rest of the world. It's about spend on cybersecurity as a percentage of IT spend. And it's about the skills to implement these things for large organizations. So I think we're at the cusp or tipping point where Africa is going to bear a big brunt of what's happening around cybersecurity. And our job is to help our customers overcome some of those hurdles that's currently in the market.
I want to spend a bulk of this conversation today talking about AI and its impact on the cybersecurity space. We've seen what's happening in development with vibe coding and the sweeping changes that are happening in the development environment and the impact it's having on careers and jobs, et cetera, et cetera. And I imagine that the impact on the AI, or sorry, on the cybersecurity space is going to be just as dramatic, not only from a defensive perspective, but also in terms of threat actors also using these tools to probe companies' defenses. And I imagine we're heading towards an escalating arms race here. But unpack it a bit for us. What have we seen? What has changed in the last few years with the arrival of generative AI? And given the pace at which it's going, have we got any hope of keeping up with this technology? And especially in the African context, where you mentioned there is a larger skills gap than elsewhere in the world.
Yeah, look, you're correct. It's an arms race. So it's this double edged sword. On the one side, AI makes cybersecurity and the offensive part much more dangerous. However, it also creates power for the defensive and the vendors that we work with. So if you look at guys like Darktrace, have spent billions of dollars on bringing AI into the way they look at endpoint security and the way they start understanding behaviors of the consumer or the user and using AI to understand how to defend. We're working with some new guys in the market out of the Middle East, a company called MorphiSec, which is basically creating a platform that sits across some of the endpoint securities and fills in the gaps. So there's cool things happening on the AI side that helps defend better. However, the threats, as I say, is escalating. One of the stats that I've read recently is that AI-powered phishing carries a click-through rate of 54%, where previously phishing was something like 12%, okay, with the click-through rate on phishing. And I think that's where companies need to think about who they engage with. Ask the vendors that you play with, what's your AI roadmap? And then second and more important is when will you be quantum ready? I think somewhere during today's conversation, we'll talk about quantum. Yes. And not like I'm a quantum physicist, but there are certain things that need to be in place. And I mean, one of the vendors that we work with that's a leader in the quantum space is a French company called Thales. I mean, everything that they do, if you go and talk to the stuff around data security, they are quantum ready today. They are not working to become quantum ready, but all of these things have an impact in terms of which vendors you choose to partner with.
So I was watching an interesting YouTube video a bit earlier about the upcoming Claude model from Anthropic. And it was quite technical, but the gist of it was that this model is going to be able to go into companies' IT systems, probe them. Agents will go out inside the company's internal IT systems, probe all of them and the defenses for any problems that might need patching, do this autonomously and keep security teams appraised of what it's doing. So you'd almost have an autonomous AI inside your network that's monitoring all the time for potential threats and unusual things going on in your network. Now, presumably threat actors are going to be able to, maybe not Anthropic, maybe some other AI tool, but they're going to be able to use these tools as well to constantly probe the defenses of organizations in real time. Are we heading to a situation where humans are no longer involved in cybersecurity, where AIs are fighting AIs and defending systems. How autonomous are these systems going to become, and what is human involvement going to be in cybersecurity in the coming years?
Yeah, I think as I said in the beginning, when we talk about the scale and the speed of it, that's where it's changed. So we as humans, I mean, we can't react fast enough. If I just see the things that people today do with AI. Now, it comes back to any organization in terms of how you create a security perimeter around this. Now, previously, the cybersecurity companies talked about the moat, which is that firewall around that. Now, it's about the identity. So, firstly, the identity. How do we protect the identity and not give these actors access to identity? And then, secondly, how do you then protect your data? Because that's what everybody's after. Now, in this instance, I think companies need to be aware that they should use AI. They should use these stress-tested AI models of these vendors, but they should create it in a – so some people call it not an LLM. They talk about a DLM, a domain language model, so that you can use AI but in the domain of your organization, and that you use the capability of the LLM model – but inside the organization, so that the information and whatever you do with that information doesn't go outside of the organization. So I think the shift in AI is moving from LLMs to DLMs. And I see a lot of the big banks in Africa already starting to create these ring-fenced DLMs in their organization to be able to react against some of these threat actors.
Mm-hmm. Is banking and financial services one of the first sectors that is starting to think about this stuff? I imagine they have to be, because they've got to protect people's money at the end of the day.
Banking. So every organization that plays a B2C role and that need to protect consumer entities and data.
Yeah.
So banking, financial services, government, and that's probably the biggest risk in Africa. Healthcare, telecommunications, retail. Those for me are the big industries around customer data, because all of these guys are looking at how can they exploit customer data. And again, when we come to the quantum discussion, the assumption needs to be that these threat actors are already busy harvesting data. They can't de-encrypt it today, but when they have got the quantum capability, then they're going to use the data that they harvested before. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's important that now you start already investing and developing on that side if you haven't. And I think there's a lot of customers in our continent that haven't even looked at quantum computing, they haven't looked at capability and decryption and all of those things.
We often see how often government facilities, government websites get hacked in South Africa, and I think it's an Africa-wide problem, and I think it speaks to the skills gap and just, you know, the lack of technical perhaps expertise in the public sector to deal with this stuff. We're moving at such a pace now, though. I mean, do you think there's an argument maybe for governments to declare this as a crisis?
They should declare it as a crisis, but you know that political actors will never declare this as a crisis. The other statistics I read the other day is there's a 4.8 million worker shortage on cybersecurity skills globally. Now, the relative African number is somewhere between 200,000 and 300,000. Now, there's no joint governmental focus in Africa to close that skills gap. So I think, yes, it needs to be declared as a crisis. The second thing is we should think about how we pull together across the African continent. Every government agency, large enterprise I'm talking to, we are talking to about how can we provide a platform to them to address some of these basic things, rather than they have to go down the route and design their own security operations center. I was last week in Mauritius, and I met with government there, and they – state institutions around how we can help them create a government. They talk about a GOC, a Government Operations Center for Cybersecurity. And we are working with them about how do we actually standardize that across the government departments? How do we get the basic things in place? How do we make sure that they are future-proof from the things that they're busy developing? And we're working not only with government, but with organizations like Mauritius Telecom in that context. So It is about industries pulling together and thinking about how do we protect the government and the public ID approach for every country.
Yeah. I mean, President Cyril Ramaphosa spent a considerable amount of time in his State of the Nation address back in February going into detail about the digital transformation plans of the government and plans for digital IDs are being led by Home Affairs, et cetera, but it's a very real concern, Werner, if we are starting to digitize citizen services and putting all this stuff online, if we're not building this from a highly secure perspective to start with. I mean, you must have engagements with the South African government and other governments across Africa. Are people in government taking this as seriously as they need to? I'm guessing the answer is no.
I think there's a lack of understanding today in terms of the threat and the implications around that. So what we try and translate are three key things. The one is that the new perimeter around security is the identity. So when you talk as a government about digital identity, so how do you secure that digital identity, that somebody doesn't steal my identity and go and do whatever they want to do with it, get into bank accounts, etc. The second thing that we talk about is it's not just about the individual. There's lots of statistic around IoT devices, but it's not just IoT devices, it's machine identities, it's service accounts, it's API keys, it's AI agents, it's encryption keys, it's certificates for payments, etc. Now, the estimation is in large enterprises, government, that already outstrips human identities 80-1. Okay. So just think about that. If you don't have a total view on, firstly, how you protect the consumer's digital identity, and then create a supply chain cascade about how do you actually do it across that that engagement and the flow of data. And that's where encryption cryptography and certificate lifecycle management comes into place. So I don't know whether you know, if you take your phone today and you or my iPhone, I can go and see my certificate on my iPhone sits there. That certificate used to refresh every 400 days, 387 days. It's now gone down to 200 days. And in 3 years from now, it's going to go down to 47 days. So it needs to be the certificate will have to be refreshed every 47 days to help with some of this digital identity. But somebody needs to manage it. So that's why people that think they can manage this on a spreadsheet or manage this manually, there are so many good platforms that is coming to the fore that we can help our customers with that, and that will help governments manage identities, digital identity, supply chain of the data. And that's how people need to think about this whole value chain of managing data, managing identities, etc. But it's not a small task. It's a big task, and it needs to be an integrated approach.
Companies obviously need to experiment with AI technologies, and you know, if they don't, they risk being left behind in a world that's moving very rapidly. But where do you draw the line between moving fast with AI deployments in your organization and moving recklessly fast?
I think it's this total move that we also see. So when I speak to my colleagues in the advisory services, whether it's KPMG or Deloitte, etc., the security, the whole conversation shift on security has moved from technology to leadership. So boards now have committees that look after security operations in the company and that the CISO report to the board, etc. However, we still see an escalation of breaches. I think there's been, just in South Africa, something like 1,600 breaches in the first 6 months of 2025. So boards need to take responsibility and help and guide the CISO of building a transformational plan. You know, there's a presentation I made the other day, and I talked about the CISO as the catalyst to digital transformation. Everybody used digital transformation and digitalization as a throwaway comment, but you can actually use a proper cybersecurity transformation plan as a catalyst to some digital transformation projects, because then you get the basics in place. So when we talk to customers, the first thing that we say to them is, have you thought about how your next 18 months look in cybersecurity? Next, the short-term stuff, the 90-day stuff, that's crucial that you've got big risks. Then the next 3 months, which are the things that you need to put the basics in place, and then the transformational stuff, which is the next 12 months after that. And the only way you can get it right is if you follow a very structured process to analyze your business. And that doesn't mean that you have to have detailed sniffers in place on networks, etc. It's actually thinking through process. What are the things that you've got in place for database security? What are the things that you have in place for application security? How do you think about business continuity? The stuff that we've been talking about for 20 years, business continuity and DR and all of those things, because that's the basis of, if you've got a crisis, how do you fail over? How do you continue your business? And I think if businesses start using the right frameworks, one of the frameworks, for example, is something called NIST, which cybersecurity advisors use globally. Others is ISO 27001, SOC, SOC 2, etc. So if you follow a good framework, you put a plan in place, you identify your key risks and be structured on implementing and fixing process together with technology, you actually have got a running chance of getting your posture right from a cybersecurity perspective in business.
Interesting. So a few years ago, maybe a decade ago, the big talk of the town in IT was BYOD and the risk that that represented. Of course, BYOD standing for bring your own device. And the concern that was that employees would, you know, connect their phones and their own laptops and whatever other devices to the corporate IT network. And this introduced risk inside the organization that could be viruses or, you know, these devices could be used to extract company company data and all that sort of thing. Are we looking at a BYOD type situation on steroids here as employees start to use shadow AI? They fire up a chat GPT window and start to ingest company spreadsheets and, you know, company ERP data, starting to analyze it and that sort of thing without any sort of corporate oversight or any view of this from the IT department. Are we, this must be happening, this shadow AI concept. How serious is it and what should organizations be doing about it? Or should they allow their employees to experiment given the risk involved?
Yeah, look, one day when you and I have time, I will take you through what we are busy doing with AI and Claude inside our own business. So we've got an objective by the end of the year to save or to have autonomous employees doing 16 hours a month of work. So we're sitting currently at about 240 hours a month. So it's equivalent of an employee and a half that do work that we just didn't have time for, but we're now automating it. So we want to get to 1,600 hours by the end of the year. So, but we do it in a responsible manner. We've got clear guidelines of what can be done and what can't be done with these things in our business. Then we have created policies, procedures, and deployed tools to manage and control it inside the organization. So if you go back 10 years in banks in South Africa were the first guys that when you walk in with, you can only use the company phone. So they give you a company phone. They lock down your camera. You can't take pictures of customer documentation and things like that. Now, that's a typical DLP tool. Okay. Then on top of that, you can deploy tools like MDM, mobile device management, or end user device management, etc. So the tools are available to make your organization safe against a lot of the things that we are talking about, but it needs to be in principle supported by process and procedure in terms of how we do it and what's the outcome that we drive in our business. I speak to a lot of banks that are building the most amazing tools that they are using AI to, again, transform their business internally, but they're doing it in a responsible manner. So anything of these things will always come back to what's the process we put in place, what's the procedure, what's the guardrails, what then are the tools that we deploy to enforce that, to get it right.
Mm-hmm. How does this all connect into the concept of zero trust? And maybe you can explain the concept of zero trust for our viewers who may not have come across it before. And allied to that, how do you explain that to a board in business terms rather than in technical jargon?
Yeah. So if you think about the different aspects of cybersecurity, and if you go and look at a framework like NIST, there's probably 17 categories. But cybersecurity, in my layman's terms, has basically got seven, let's call it seven pillars of cybersecurity. It's mobile security, it's end-user security, it's cloud, it's network, it's data, it's application, and then the last one is integrated risk management or governance, risk, and compliance. And if you think about a horizontal thing where you say, at this side, I'm level one. So what is a level one? Level one means I have really done nothing about any of those cybersecurity pillars. And level five is what people will coin zero trust. It means that we create an environment for each of those pillars. That means nobody can come in from the outside. We trust nobody inside or outside the business. And I haven't seen any enterprise in Africa that designed each of those pillars for zero trust, because at some stage it becomes too. So the exponential cost in getting to a zero trust environment is exorbitant. I don't think somewhere you will say, well, it doesn't warrant the expense around it. So always when we've got a conversation with customers, we say to them, of those security categories, where do you think is the largest exposure? Or we will say to them, for financial services, those four of the seven, no compromise. You need to get to a zero trust environment. On the other three, it's about what is right for you as a business. What is enough? And I think that's that judgment of where to get, I think a lot of customers still struggle with, because they mustn't get into a panic and think everything needs to be a zero trust environment. We typically would guide them through what is a right fit for their market and their industry. I'll give you an example. When we do a cybersecurity assessment on customers, we've got a detailed tool that do this with NIST. Most of the companies in Africa score 48% on their cybersecurity posture. Best in class score more than 60%. But it means that on some of the key things like cloud security, identity security, etc., they will score 80% and above. The other things, it's about what is enough and adequate for our organization in terms of where we believe the exposure would be. And it's based on some of the guidance that we have from companies across Africa. That's the cool thing about working across Africa. It's not a cookie cutter principle. It's not like we sit in Europe and say, this is how it must be for Africa.
Mm. I wanted to ask you, Sanlam announced, I think about a week or two ago now, that they are appointing a chief AI officer.
Yes.
It came on the back. Exactly. And HSBC, a big British headquartered bank, announced that they were also appointing a chief AI officer. And I've seen a number of organizations actually internationally creating this new role within their organization. In your view, does it make sense to have a chief AI officer? And if so, what does that reporting structure look like? Because I imagine they'd have to work very closely with the CISO and with the CIO, and possibly with other C-level executives. Should they be reporting into the CEO or the CIO or the CISO? I mean, how should this be structured with an organization if it even makes sense to create such a role?
Yeah, look, lots of companies have dabbled around with things like chief innovation officers and chief digital officers. And then 2 years later, they decide it doesn't fit their structure because they are built around their business units, etc. I think it's important. So whether you call it a chief AI officer or a chief innovation officer, etc., that's where you are generating the capability to streak ahead of your competition. I use our organization as an example. We are a small business. We are 120 people. But if I can get to a situation where I do things that my competitors aren't doing, and by the end of the year I've got 10 autonomous employees that does things that take time away from me being focused on strategic things. I think it's great for the business. Myself and my marketing manager sat last night, and we've now created an autonomous social media intern that does the posts for us within the guardrails that we set up, etc. And it's amazing. So there's a lot of different things that we are now doing that that automate repetitive tasks and can help businesses focus on strategic differentiation, which is where businesses differentiate themselves.
So maybe the argument is that this big picture stuff should sit in some sort of role like the chief strategy officer, because very often CIOs are very focused on operational issues, you know, making sure the systems are running and not falling over. And the CISO is very often just focused on preventing attackers from getting past the perimeter, and perhaps don't have the time to think about, you know, how could AI completely transform our organization, because they're just dealing with day-to-day operational stuff. Don't have time to think about the big strategic stuff. I mean, AI is clearly going to transform so many industries. Who in the organization should actually be doing that big picture thinking? Should it be coming out of the CEO's office? Should it be a new role within the organization? What's your thinking around that?
You know, I think that chief innovation officer, chief AI officer, chief digital officer, is a strategic role. I would put it in the CEO's office, and the operational guys that execute on build, operate, transfer should sit in that operational function. But this is a strategic function, because if you get it right, whether it's about AI, digital transformation, or innovation, it creates the platform for you to get ahead of the competition. And I promise you, every time we talk about it in our small business and what we are busy doing, I can see we've started with this big project 2 months ago, and now we're saving 240 hours a month. And it's three of us that's working on it. Just think if we really unlocked this in our business.
Yeah, the impact on productivity is going to be absolutely massive. I mean, we can talk about this stuff all afternoon, Werner, but we do need to keep the podcast relatively tight. So I want to come back to what we promised we were going to talk about at the beginning of the show, and that's quantum computing. There've been big advances there as well. People don't really have access to quantum computers yet. It's very much in a lab sort of environment, but it's coming in the next few years, and it's going to be made available to organizations through cloud services. People aren't going to have quantum computers in their basements, not yet anyway. But it is coming, and access will be controlled initially. But presumably in time, assuming this technology proves itself, it's going to become fairly widely distributed. Should we be thinking about that? I mean, you've said we should be thinking about quantum computing from a security perspective already. Given that this stuff is probably a 2030s story, is it right to be delving deeply into the stuff at the moment? Is it something maybe just to keep at the back of the mind, or should companies be developing strategies already to deal with the potential impact of quantum computing from a security perspective?
Yes. Without talking too long about it, I want to refer back to something that I read 15 months ago. So before I came into this role, I read a book. The book's written by New York Times investigative reporter. The book's name is, I think the title is something like, This is How They Tell Me the World Ends. And it's all about investigative reporting around cybersecurity and state actors and things like that, where America was, for example, accused of hacking into Angela Merkel's phone in 2014 when she was the German chancellor. And it was actually through a Microsoft zero-day bug that they got back in.
I remember that.
So we mustn't think that quantum is a 10 years from now or a 2030 problem. I mentioned earlier in the conversation that quantum is the concept of harvest now and decrypt later. So in that book, she also said she believes that 90% of American critical infrastructure is already infected by other state actors, whether it's China or Russia or whatever it is, and that the stuff is lying there dormant to be activated. Now, this comes back to the harvest now, decrypt later. So I think there's actors that's already, and that's why I say it's not a 10-year problem. There's people that's already harvesting data. They just can't read the data currently because it's encrypted. Now, what quantum is going to do, it's going to allow these adversaries to start reading your data or getting access to your data. So, and that's why I'm saying when organizations think quantum is a 10-year problem, it isn't. The timeline is being compressed. So you need to get to a partner now in your vendor process that's quantum ready today. And I mentioned, so I'm not yet punting Thales, but I just know from what we've seen with Thales in terms of how they think about data security, how they drive tokenization, encryption, cryptography in the way they develop things. I will always say to a customer, when you think about data security, it's the first guys that I will call closer and say, how do we design your whole data security strategy so that you can counter quantum when it's available? But you need to do it now. It's not a 10-year plan. It is a now plan.
Okay. So if I'm the CEO of Standard Bank, what should I be telling my teams about quantum, and what should I be thinking about quantum? I mean, obviously the threat, the big threat here is we're heading towards a world in which existing cryptography is broken. And that plays a very direct role, obviously, in financial services, but it's not just financial services, it's across the board, wherever valuable sensitive information is being kept. How should Sim Chabalala at Standard Bank be thinking about this, and what conversation should he be having with his teams about it?
Yeah, look, I hope he listens to the podcast. But in that instance, if I'm Sim Chabalala, I would stand in front of my team and say, "What we see from everything we read and what we listen is the clock is running already. Okay, the scale just doesn't exist. So." This is a fundamental business risk for us as a bank. So what I need you as my team to do is to go and build a strategy that we – as first step is how do we build our strategy to encrypt our data? That when quantum comes from the threat actors, that they actually can't – that we've got a counter for that. So start with data strategy. Second, start with your identity. The identity as the – as the new perimeter, and develop a strategy with the best guys in the world around how do we make sure that we future-proof our business? Because it's a business risk. It's not about technology anymore.
Lots to think about, Werner. As I say, we could talk about this for hours, and I think we probably should have more conversations on the show about cybersecurity and what's coming down the line, not only from a quantum perspective, but the very real impact that AI is having already. On this space, and I think organizations not just in Africa but around the world are scrambling to keep up, and it's getting more and more difficult as the pace just accelerates. But Werner, thank you for your time on the show. Werner Lindemann is a group CEO at Data Group IT. I appreciate your insights. Thank you
for the time. I appreciate the opportunity.